SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
My guest, Mel Brown, has worked with child protection for 20 years, including managing an Aboriginal child protection unit. She was recognised for her work with Aboriginal families and was awarded an ACT Public Service Award for the most improved services to Aboriginal children and families in the ACT. She was awarded the most improved service for Aboriginal children and families in the ACT by the ACT Chief Minister. And in 2011, New South Wales Industry and Investment recognised Mel as one of the top three Aboriginal businesswomen in New South Wales. She's also acclaimed for her expertise in cultural competency and lateral violence, both nationally and internationally. And I'm glad to say that Mel Brown is joining us on NITV Radio today to give us insights into her memoir, Sheds of Me, a book that follows her journey as she redefines who she is and how she sees her place in the world. Mel, thanks a lot for joining us on NITV Radio.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me.
Tell us about the making of this book. What inspired you to write this really riveting memoir?
That's a really interesting question because I'd never had the intent of writing a book. I have other publications and that's just something that I just do. I was asked to then write my book by Gelding Press, by Rockpool Publishing. They just said, Mel, write your book. We're really interested in your story. And it's just like, really? Like, that takes a long time. So I thought it might take me, you know, a year or so to do it. But 3 years later, here we go. We actually have something in print and it's in my hands right now. So the inspiration, I never had that inspiration. It was just something that happened. And I'm really grateful for the experience that I've had in writing the book.
I guess it would have been easy because this is a book about your lived experience, about stories of you growing up and then overcoming some really, really extraordinary challenges. How did you approach researching and writing about your heritage as a Ngunnawal woman and, writing about your personal story?
That part wasn't very hard because growing up without knowing about my Aboriginality, even getting into my very early 20s and my mum telling me about my Aboriginality, it was a surprise, but it wasn't really that much of a surprise. So it wasn't that hard because I was still living and working in my own community. The difference was I moved from mainstream work after a period of time. Learning that you're Aboriginal just gives you a sense of heritage. But that sense of identity is about becoming part of your community and being known in your community. So that just took me a little while, took me a year or two before I felt confident in being able to say, I'm Aboriginal, and that's when you get that whole sense of identity. So that part wasn't very hard. I was very, very lucky. My community at that point in time when I was living in Canberra were very accepting of me and certainly knew who my family was. So it just sort of like slipped straight in. It was very easy.
Yeah, it was very easy. And now let's dive into the book and the first part, because reading it, the first part was very riveting in the way you describe your early childhood, marked by despair and domestic violence. And yet you overcame such a difficult circumstances just to become who you are today, a very successful businesswoman, writer, speaker, and also contributing to policymaking in areas that you've lived and worked on to actually help alleviate the burden on First Nations families and children.
The earlier part of the book where I talk about family violence, domestic violence, living through it and being in it, you didn't have a name for it back then. We certainly have names for it today. Back then it was just, you just survived it. I didn't know that my house was that different to any other house. I had moments of when I realised, you know, as I got a little bit older, that, hang on, this isn't right. But by then I'd already left home. I was in a relationship of my own by then. And at that point in time, living in, you know, some pretty big domestic violence as well. And it took me quite a long time to recognise it for what it was, because it was all so normal for me. And that's what's sad for so many of us women living in, and men, but us women living in domestic violence. Sometimes we get so used to living in that state of trauma that you don't recognise that there's another way in which to live. And I guess as I learned about that combined with learning about my Aboriginality was where I really moved into child protection at that point. Moving into child protection was certainly a really interesting phase in my life. I was the first Aboriginal person they'd ever employed back then in ACT in child protection. So I was doing it really tough. I did it really tough. Myself and then we got another Aboriginal person working with us, and we pushed and pushed and pushed that we, you know, eventually at the end of the day, we got an Aboriginal child protection unit, but there was a lot of steps that happened to get to that point. And I guess that's where I was recognised for my work, where I got my public service award, was recognised for that really big effort that I put into it. I didn't do it alone though. There was a few other people that stood beside me and were really amazing support during that time as well. So, and I guess that's what took me from domestic violence to child protection, was that walking my journey and learning my healing, not learning, but learning, you know, that life can be different, and beginning my healing to the point where I felt that I could work in this area, an area of child protection where children were being abused, that I actually sort of knew, had a sense of what, you know, children and families would be going through because I'd been there myself.
Yeah, and this actually helped to contribute to developing policy, and your case highlights actually things that you mentioned that are really, really important for people to really understand how significant they are about mainstreaming child protection. And you really highlight the need to have culturally appropriate services, because you lived it, and you, through your work, you also highlighted how. I'm not going to delve too much into it. I'll let you maybe explain how you came to developing the policies and help develop policies, best practice in child protection.
Yeah. As I said, you know, I was a bit of a, you know, I didn't see it back then, but in reflection, I was a bit of a pioneer back then. New South Wales certainly had their identified Aboriginal positions and Aboriginal child protection units, but in Canberra, we didn't have those at that time. I looked to New South Wales at that point, constantly looking at what their policies and procedures and even their legislation looked like. And constantly I was like that dog with the, you know, that proverbial dog with a bone. I wouldn't let go. And I just kept coming back and coming back. So I think by the end of it, I pushed and pushed with the help of other good people. We finally got legislation around the Aboriginal placement principle. And certainly by the end of it, we had an Aboriginal unit which recognised that Aboriginal families might and sometimes have different needs to that of mainstream non-Aboriginal families. So that was really great that was recognised. It didn't come easy. There was, you know, it was always changing policy and procedure and legislation at that level was really difficult. And at the end, I guess it came at a price where it was time, you know, that I'd seen too much and just done too much, that it was time for a change after a while. So, but it was brilliant. Like I have in the book, great stories. I guess one of the things I'm good at is seeing, I can see the serious side, but my goodness, I can see the funny side of things too. So in the book, there's some really sad stories, some humbling stories, and some really, really funny stories about things that happened way back then.
Well, you tell it with a lot of humor. I recall one incident which really is a bit scary where the service wasn't working properly and you almost left kids in foster care of, you know, at someone's place who hadn't even asked for.
We were a really great office back then, and we used to have an award ceremony at the end of each year, you know, just, you know, your social club sort of thing. And I continually won the award for that one, even though it only happened once, thank goodness, a new way of recruiting foster carers. You take them to the wrong address, or you take them to a family, you leave them almost behind when you realise that you've got the wrong address, the right street, just the wrong suburb.
Yeah.
And that made sense why the gentleman kept looking at me going, I don't know why you're leaving these children with me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, don't you know you're a foster carer? You should know why children are coming. So I wasn't saying that. I was thinking that in my head. And it was, you know, as we're walking away, when he really came and said, look, you can't... who are you? Why are you leaving these children? It's just like, oh my goodness, wrong address, right street, wrong suburb.
But a man who was very welcoming and very, well, could have ended up very dramatically, although it's a funny situation.
He was very lovely. He was so humble. I was just so pleased he didn't remember my name or make a report to me, about me, because I could have been in a little bit of trouble over that one. But, yeah. I often used to think about that one sometimes.
Yeah.
That was lucky.
And the book, Shades of Me, delves into you, the many lives you've lived. You talk about your childhood in some very deep, troubling circumstances we've just spoken about, and then you transition into other areas of your life. You go from really terrible and tough circumstances to going to university despite not properly finishing your high schools in the normal traditional pathway, and ending up really doing many things and being successful at what you do, actually.
In Canberra, you finish year 10 and then you go on to what we call college there, where you do 11 and 12. College is a separate school altogether. And I did try. I left year 10 and tried to go to college, but, you know, all of a sudden you have all this freedom. Nobody cared. Well, you know, it wasn't as if anyone was, you weren't going to get into trouble if you didn't go to school or not. So the newfound freedom was probably a little bit too much freedom than I was able to manage. So that was it, sort of the end of my schooling at that point in time. I did work along the way, lots of trainings, lots of courses, lots of everything to get me to where I am. But then in my early 40s, I think, was I had the opportunity. They got together a group of people, Aboriginal people, who were working in jobs that should be recognised with qualifications, but we were working those jobs without the qualification. We were there because of our experience. And there was this woman there who came up to me and said, you know, you could do your master's. And it's just like, oh, you've got to be kidding. I've only got a year 10 certificate. And she said, you should look into it. And so, goodness, I think it was that within months I was enrolled in to do my master's in Aboriginal healing and trauma, which was really great, something I didn't think I would ever do. I never thought I'd have my master's. But, there it is. I have it. I'll be honest with you, a piece of paper, I'm 100% behind education. Do not get me wrong. I think that education gets to change our outcomes. But I went into it with a view of, look, I'm going to get a piece of paper for something that I already know. And I did get that piece of paper for most of everything they'd already knew. What it did, it put some frameworks and some theory around what it was I naturally did anyway. So it wasn't hard. I didn't find it difficult getting my master's because of my past experience, but it opened a lot of doors afterwards. Education, or that level of education out there in the big world, everybody likes to see some letters at the back of your name, which makes no difference to me, but it does out there. So I highly recommend whatever educational level people can get to, please just go out and do it, because it does open extra doors for you.
Yeah, indeed, for you. And it's testimony that if you're not successful in the traditional career pathways, there are other ways, other means to get actually to where you are. You made it. And if you did it well, yeah, others can also do it. So it's a really, really a good example to follow. Now, there's a part of the book that is very, very I'd say intriguing to someone who is not into spirituality, where you talk about your experience as a clairvoyant.
I know, isn't it odd how I can go from do all of that and still have that experience? Yeah, yes. So I guess around my mid-30s, I started realizing that there was, I've always known there was something bigger out there. You call it God, you call it ancestors, you call it universe, whatever it is, that higher power is that you call. So everybody, most people would have a word for it. And I have always known that there's something bigger out there than me. But it wasn't until I guess I got to my mid-30s that I really started to embrace that. And I guess, you know, the minute that door opened, it was really a hard door to close. So that sort of set me on another different journey. That journey often ran alongside my other stuff, and sometimes it was my whole journey. But I think one of the oddest things was learning how to understand my clairvoyance and really work with it in a really positive way. And for some people that read the book, it'll be, oh yeah, that's a bit crazy. And other people will really go, yep, I get it. I know what she's talking about. But I think if people, you know, there's some stories there about my clairvoyance and my spirituality and all of that. And I think that if people who are really not into that stuff can just see it as a way of just understanding that higher power that we all, most of us would have an understanding that exists out there. And again, as I say, sometimes it was my whole journey. You know, I talk about stories of when I opened a shop here in Ballina for a while and worked as a clairvoyant for quite a few years, not quite a few, but 2 or 3 years straight, and how hard that really was to manage that in whatever real life looks like, because sometimes when you're a clairvoyant, it can begin to take over your life and we're getting to that point where I just needed to break from it. So now what I do is that it's always with me. It doesn't get to go away. It's always here. But it's how I use it now. So I do Aboriginal Oracle cards now, which is how I am able to do what I do. But I have to take time off to do it because I can't. Now I'm a trainer and I still work in child protection on this. Sidelines of child protection now, but I can't do both at the same time. I have to take time off to do a new set of oracle cards, which I'm lucky enough to do probably one set every year or two, and then I have to go back and do my other work as well.
Right, an area you pioneered. Are there any others working in the same space, or you're still the only one?
As far as clairvoyance go, there are so many really good, talented Aboriginal people out there that use their connection to ancestors and spirit. Some very, very good ones. As far as the oracle cards go, I believe that there's one or two out there, but I think I probably have the biggest share of the market. I would, if that's, you know, to put it in, you know, those terms. And that is because I'm supported so well by my publisher. My publisher is absolutely amazing. So, and they are so encouraging of me all the time to try to get more and more, you know, to get more cards. I'm actually just starting work on my tarot cards, the first deck of Aboriginal tarot cards now, which should be out probably in about 12 months' time.
Please keep us in the loop and let us know when they come out. We'd like to actually talk about it in our program as well. And now, what impact do you hope your book will have on readers, especially those who may not be familiar with Aboriginal culture?
I guess my book offers so many different things to different people. And I think that when I'm thinking about what's my book all about, I just think it just can't be put in a box. I think that there's so many different aspects to my book that there'll be people that like parts of it, there'll be people that will like lots of it, and I just can't see it being put into a box on its own, because it's all over the place, because I've had so many different, they're my dreaming journeys, like they're my dreamings, and I'm still on my dreaming path at this moment in time. I'm hoping that everybody finds something that they'll be able to get out of it.
Before I let you go, I think I'll let you have some closing thoughts, or maybe tell us about something we may have missed that it's really important to bring to the attention of our listeners.
At this moment in time, family violence and domestic violence has a really high media profile at this point in time. And I think that it was a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking to somebody, and it struck me that, you know, I thought to myself, this is a really interesting time for my book to be coming out, because with all the things that are happening around family violence, domestic violence, I think that this is a book because, as you've read it, it starts off with those stories. And I think that it will be important that anybody that reads it and that we understand we're not on this journey on our own. So many of us people, women and men, but mostly women, so many of us are on this journey and we don't have to feel alone. There are other people out there, and you'll be surprised at the amount of other people out there that are experiencing the same things as what they are. It's just talk to somebody, find somebody, talk. It might not be conversation that might not be that conversation that gets you to leave or to change your life, but it's the beginning of a conversation, of many conversations that might come in the future, until people are ready to make themselves safe, or try to make themselves safe, I should say. For me right now, family violence and domestic violence is huge. It's always been a big thing for me, but this book might be the difference for some people, knowing that it's, you know, they're not on their own, and maybe one or two people having the courage to leave those relationships and make themselves, begin a healing process.
Mel, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio today.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.